This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 201. It is cold. I am going to turn on my heat a little bit. The Ozarks weather, it's always fascinating in the Ozarks, because earlier this week, it was in the 60s. It is now in the 20s. And I mean, in one day, we had a 30 degree drop. So this has been an interesting summer. Anyways, and we got a little precipitation today, which, yay, we always need the rain. But yeah, there was a little ice mixed in with it. Some of the other things, I actually had some new windows put in to the little rock house on our property that we have a very nice couple who's living in the rock house at this point. And we had some new windows. They finally got installed today. And so the workers were kind of working in this cold, but at least it wasn't so cold, you know, that the pipes froze or anything like that. At least I don't think they did. And so I was going to run over and pay for the job and get that taken care of. And I was coming across a bridge, and there was two separate accidents on these bridges. So apparently people weren't paying enough attention that, yes, in fact, bridges do ice more than roads do when we're in this type of weather. And so the policemen had already come for one of them, and I think the policemen were on the way for the other one. And I did manage to get across okay, but just a little excitement on the drive home. So the drive home is actually going to be a bit longer today than it normally is, since I ran a little bit south to write the check, and then as it turns out, the guy wasn't even there for me to give my money to. So, but his receptionist was there, so she took all the information, and he's going to mail me an invoice, and we're going to take care of it that way. So it will be great. The writing is puttering along. That seems to be going fine. Had a few little extras this week in terms of meeting with people. And so there was a little bit of shortened time to write. But, you know, it's going fine. And I'm kind of staying on my target of trying to put out at least a page an hour. So that all seems to be going fine. And it's about to get really interesting with this book, because I think I may have another chapter or possibly two chapters, maybe three, before I sort of run out of the things that I know are going to happen. Maybe four. So this is where books get interesting, because there's already things in this. I didn't expect it was going to be this long before I get to the first big dramatic thing in the book. But, you know, little pieces crop up and you go, oh, that'll be fun. And you take that little detour and then you come back around and, oh, that'll fit. And you take that little detour. And so I'm going to be very interested. I probably won't be to the big, exciting battle till I doubt I will be there next week, maybe the next week, but then after that, it's going to be fun. It'll just be interesting to see what happens in this story, because I sort of know what we want to do here, but I don't know all the particulars. So always interesting. It's been a good week in terms of meeting with friends. My buddy, the only sadness about this at all is that my buddy that I normally meet with on Fridays can no longer meet on Fridays. He has actually retired and moved down to help care for his mother. So, good for him. But he's not going to be in town on Fridays anymore, but we've figured out that he will be in town on Thursdays, so I already have a Thursday morning, but it's only once a month, so I think we're going to roll back to once a month with him, but at least I'll get a chance still to see him occasionally. And I picked up another friend on Monday morning, a very, very good friend, whom I have not had a chance to fellowship with on a regular basis for some time. And we finally decided, forget this, we're doing it. So we're getting together once a month on Mondays to just stay caught up. It's good. It's just good. Had a really nice time with him. So, hold on a minute. This is a call from the people that were going to pay me. I'm supposed to pay them. Just a second. I'll be right back. Well, I'm actually going to have to do some editing on this. Ritz! Usually don't edit these, but I hit the off button instead of the pause button. Arrgh. Arrgh. Oh, well. That's fine. I'll just go into Audacity and put them together. It'll be fine. Sorry, that was the owner of the place that did the windows. So he was just, you know, he sounded a little unhappy that I hadn't actually written the check. So I was like, oops, sorry, you weren't there. Anyway, so he's going to get in touch with me tomorrow and we'll get it all figured out. Anyways. So yes, it's been good. It's just been a good, good week in terms of meeting with friends. And I met with one of my newer friends on Tuesday, and we had a very nice talk. And I'm actually going to get to talk to my grandson tonight, or godson tonight. He's going to Skype, I think, around 8:30 or so, and so we're going to get caught up with him. And so it's just good. I love talking to people. Love talking to people. Anyways, so this week, I haven't actually finished the book that I have been reading. And I had only downloaded the sample of the book. And the book was called Connectome. Sorry. I need to clean off my windshield. I know that doesn't sound great. Okay. Enough of that foolishness. I just couldn't see. Anyways. So I've been reading this book called Connectome. Or I Am My Connectome or something. But the word is Connectome. That's the important word. C-O-N-N-E-C-T-O-M-E, Connectome. And it is by Sebastian Seung, S-E-U-N-G. And it's a pretty interesting book, and it's a big book, and I was working my way through it. You know, some stuff that I had already known, but that's fine. I was working my way through it. And then, last night I was actually looking for another TED Talk that my friend had said he was going to send me the link to, and he didn't, but it was a really good TED Talk on positivity, and I was trying to remember if I had done a TED Talk on this TED Talk, but since he didn't send that to me, I was searching around trying to find it, and lo and behold, Sebastian Seung had done a TED Talk on this thing, Connectome. The TED Talk was I Am My Connectome. And he had done a TED Talk, and I thought, well, this will work out okay, because he's probably going to summarize what's in the book. And then I don't have to buy the book. So, because the book was good. It was fine. You know, but it was like, let's cut to the chase here. So he did cut to the chase in it. And it was a very interesting TED Talk. And basically, when they're talking about connectomes, they're talking about this grand quest to discover what makes life happen, what makes us human. And part of the process of that discovery, was the sequencing of human DNA, which was a huge accomplishment. It's very cool. And there were 3 billion base pairs in DNA. Oops, sorry, just hit the recorder. 3 billion base pairs in DNA. So it was a massive project. But now they're to the point where they can reliably sequence human DNA. It's still a little expensive and it still takes a while, but it's getting better and the price is dropping. They say now that there's actually a layer of information on top of DNA. And we've mentioned that before on some other podcast. Epigenetics, I think it's called. And now, of course, they're trying to figure all that out and sequence that, which is hugely more complicated than just the normal genome. Because now you have all of these other proteins that appear to be inhibiting the expression of certain sections of DNA. And so while you have DNA and its ability to turn things on and off and control the growth, now you also have these other switches that can flip DNA on and off. And so you get this enormously complex system. Well, what this guy is talking about with the connectome is literally orders of magnitude more complex than that. And the reason I find this interesting is that I have talked on other podcasts about the three waves of science. That, in my opinion, science is proceeding in three waves. That the first wave is just observational based on the surface of things. And so you have man walking around on the earth, seeing animals, drawing pictures of animals, making little clay animals and going, me make animal. I just can't make animal move, but me make animal. And feeling like, well, you know, life isn't that complicated around me. After all, I can take some clay. I can make an animal, too. And then in the second wave of science, men begin to dissect and begin to look and begin to see things that are very complex. It's very intimidating. And they start expending all of this effort trying to figure things out. And in the process of that, they begin to recognize that if, in fact, there is a creator, this is my opinion, they begin to recognize, in fact, that if, in fact, there is a creator, he must be very large and very intelligent and intimidating. And so as part of that response, they then begin to think, well, this couldn't have been designed. It's just too immense. The universe is too broad and we're so tiny. So this just happened. But there is a third wave of science that I think is coming. And it certainly will not come for everyone, because I think God is very, very good about leaving us with the possibility of choice. And I think humanity has been blessed with this ability to believe. And as part of that, I think humanity has been blessed and allowed by God that no matter where we are, you can come up with a reason to believe that he is not there. And yet, I think we are at the beginning of a third wave of science, if we haven't already wandered into it already, where we are coming to understand that the world is not just a complex place, that it is an astoundingly complex place, that there are things that function in the world that are horrifically complicated, beautifully intricate, and seem almost impossible to figure out. And in fact, this guy with the connectome is actually attempting, he and his colleagues have set it as a goal to figure out what probably is the most complex of all the things, awesomely complex of all the things that exist in the world, and that is the human brain. The connectome really comes down to the configuration of human neurons in our brain and how they are connected to each other. Just to give you, just to give you some comparison, the speaker was comparing his quest, against a quest that has already been accomplished. There is a connectome that has already been mapped. And that connectome belongs to a tiny worm. This tiny worm's nervous system consists of 300 neurons. Just 300 neurons. And those 300 neurons have 7,000 connections between them. 300 neurons, 7,000 connections, which if you're doing the math, means that there's a little over 20 connections that each neuron has with other neurons. And there's only 300 total. So each neuron is in fact connected to, 6% of other neurons? 6.5%, 7%, somewhere in there. This work that was done by a team of scientists, this work, I believe he said, took 10 years. 10 years, 300 neurons, 7,000 connections. He said, now the human connectome is far more complex than that, because the human brain does not contain 30 neurons, although some days it might feel like that. The human brain contains 100 billion neurons, billion with a B, and 10,000 times as many connections. Horrifically complicated. But this scientist believes that if you could actually map out all those connections and compare one person's connectome to another person's connectome, that you could actually answer questions like, why is this person a generally optimistic person? Why is this other person a generally pessimistic person? Why does this person suffer from autism? What can we do about that? I mean, there's a lot of, according to him, there's a lot of potential amazing things we can do with this if we could ever do this and map this out. Now, this seems like an enormous quest, but you know, you gotta dream big. So when he was talking, I was like, whoa, good for you. Go for it, buddy. So the best tool that they have right now for this is magnetic resonance imaging. And they're studying this, and what it does is it takes a picture in slices, and then they can put all the slices together and they can build a 3D model. What was really fascinating was that they zoomed in on this mouse brain, section of this mouse brain, tiny little piece of mouse brain. I think he said 6 microns on a side. And he showed all the layers, and he said, now if we go through laboriously and color code this, and then just show you what the color code, this thing looks like a solid mass. If we show you what the color coding looks like just on what we can identify, it starts to grow out and you see the beginnings of a neuron, you know, and you see the trunk and you see a few little starts of branches that are going out. And he said, this is a little tiny piece of a neuron. And these are the branches that it makes. And then he showed another section. It was really fascinating. He showed another section where they had color-coded it in red and in green for two different neurons. And he showed how very organically these neurons are twisting and branches are going out from them in a lot of different directions. And this particular neuron was, in fact, connected in two places to this other neuron. And you could see them hovering near each other and across that gaps, that synapse, across that gap is where the chemical reactions fire that somehow gets translated into this marvelous engine of thought that we have. As one man said, this experience simulator that's in our brains that can not only process what's coming in from the outside world, but we can run simulations internally so that we don't have to try everything by hand. And it's all happening in the connections between these neurons. Now, this little tiny cube that he was showing there was just packed with material. It's got all these neurons all kind of tangled up inside there. And he said, just to give you some feeling of the scope of what we're talking about, he said, I'm going to go ahead and zoom out. And so he zoomed out, and this little tiny 6 micron by 6 micron square. He zoomed out and showed it against a full neuron. And this neuron is like this massive, massive tree. I mean, it's literally like standing next to a 50 or 60 foot tree that has a full spray of branches. And this little section that they're studying is like some small dog sitting next to this tree. It was really interesting. And then he said, you know, and this neuron, he's pulled back again. He said, this is how it is in relation to a mouse brain, and it was just a little tiny section of that. And he said, and of course a mouse brain is much smaller than a human brain. And so what you're looking at is really an enormously, enormously complex thing. And he actually, at one point, he said, you know, why in the world did I ever choose to study this organ that is so awesome in its complexity that it very well might be infinite? And when he said that, I thought, yep, third wave of science. You know, things are coming in. And he said the reason that he chose this is because if they ever do get a connectome mapped, if they ever achieve that, is that it will be one of the greatest technological accomplishments of all time. And I would say, hear, hear, yes, absolutely. I would agree. And he was talking about all the things that might be possible. And of course, one of the things he said in it, he said, we always want to kind of see what the ultimate endpoint of such research might be. So he said, let's just dream for a little bit what the ultimate endpoint of that research might be. I'm getting my mail. One moment. Well, I think I'm getting my mail. My window is frozen. Okay, I will open my door instead of breaking my window. Okay. All right. Okay. And he said, ultimately, from a theoretical standpoint, if you could map the entire connectome and you could represent it some other way, for instance, in some massive, massive computer system that would allow all those artificial neurons to be connected exactly the same way and to fire in exactly the same types of patterns, then theoretically, you could download your personality and all you were in terms of your thoughts and your beliefs into a computer. I'm backing into my garage. One moment, if I can see, because it's a little foggy in here. So let's see if I can not drive my car into a wall. That would be good. And he said, the people that are cryogenically freezing themselves, hoping that someday we'll be able to unthaw them and they can live again. He said, we don't really know at this point, but he said, theoretically, if we could map the connectome and the cryogenic process did not destroy the connectome, and then if we could read that connectome, theoretically, what you could get to is you could actually reproduce this person and put them in a different container and give them immortality. Of course, we are a long way from that. But here's what's interesting. From our standpoint, the technology is obviously mind-boggling. Technology is obviously almost inconceivable to do that. But as I've talked about before, in Colossians, Paul says, nothing was made without him, speaking of Jesus Christ. All things were made through him, and by him all things consist. By him all things cohere. And as I've talked about in another podcast, if in fact what Paul is saying is that it is the power of Jesus Christ, the power of God, that allows the chaos of the quantum world to cohere and achieve coherence to create the world we live in, and it is, if it is the active influence of God that creates this world, then God would be intimately aware of the world, of every quark, molecule, position of everything in the world, and would in fact be intimately aware of our connectomes. And so if he was intimately aware of our connectomes, and if he could create glorified bodies, which we're told in Scripture that God would create for us, then this ability to translate who we are into a glorified body and even enhance our abilities doesn't seem beyond the scope of what God can do at all. If, in fact, he's holding the entire universe together. I mean, if he can manage that, he can manage translating our connectomes into another body that is an eternal body. So it's interesting. It's just very interesting. It was very awe-inspiring. I recommend watching the TED Talk because to see the graphics and things, because it's just, it's so amazingly beautiful in its raw, organic way. And I just thought, wow, what an interesting quest to set yourself on as a human being. And wow, what an amazing designer our God is. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.